If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the Most High. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is The Advancing Era of Light and the Appearing Ancient Ones. So, if you're ready, take a deep breath and allow that anointing of your higher divine vehicles of light to clothe you with that part of you that is birthless, deathless, immortal, and perfect right now. Own it and take another deep breath and let it embody and occupy you. Deep breath. Just own it. Feel that tingling go all the way down into your toes. And just take a moment and feel the inner energy body. Don't allow your sense of self to stop with the outline of your body. Allow the radiation of your higher potential to course through and radiate through every cell, every atom of your being. And realize it keeps expanding, and it stops only where you stop. You're continually expanding life. Expansion is the nature of your divine self. And that expansion is life itself, life more abundant. And we would capitalize the L on that life. And that life and God and the divine self that you are identical. They're one and the same. So we are known, spiritually speaking, by our light radiation. And the light radiation sets the light quotient of how much we have infused our higher nature and wedded it with the human levels, the vehicles that go to make up our different levels of expression. For example, we are one with God at the monadic, or pure spirit level. From that monad, we send a ray of consciousness and an extension, which we call the soul or the jivi, jivatma. And that goes forward into the realms of consciousness to gain experience and to also bring greater and greater light and fusion into your personality levels. That would be your physical body and its expression, your emotional nature, your mental body, and your etheric or subconscious levels, your energy bodies. All of these become homogenized, let's say, with the light of your higher principles. And when that light is 100% in manifestation, you have attained mastery. And all of your levels have become one, so that what you intend, what you speak, what you think, and what you express are completely coherent and one. And that's how you can tell a master soul. They don't have a disparity between what they say and what they think and what they actually do. So it's very important that each one of us become more and more infused with the energy of our soul. And we do that through meditation and service, coupled, I would say, with equipping the mind with a deeper and more esoteric understanding of the divine plan and humanity's overall purpose within it. Because when you move into soul awareness, you go into the level of consciousness in which it is group-focused. It is a collective awareness. You go from me and mine into the sense of we and ours. And there's a whole paradigm shift in how you relate with yourself and with others and the world at large. So we are in, I don't think I've spoken about this for a while. It used to be a common theme. And I actually spoke about this at the United Nations. I think it was 1997 or 98, I forget which, but one of those 2 years. And it's something that we are all part of as members of the spiritual forces of light, or the brotherhood of light, or the spiritual hierarchy, however you want to language that. But we are an interplanetary and planetary collective of beings in that state of light infusion and soul integration. The masters would, of course, be those who have perfected that, who have indeed become self and God-realized. And for all intents and purposes, are perfected in terms of being fully human and having graduated beyond the stage of human to superhuman and divine levels. I believe I've spoken to you about the fact that the human body itself is an evolutionary advancement from the third kingdom, which is the animal kingdom, wedded with a soul, which is the consciousness that inhabits the body, which is at the fifth level or fifth dimension or fifth plane of consciousness. And so the human being is the mediator between the animal kingdom and the divine, which places us right in the middle as the fourth kingdom. So to recapitulate, the form evolves, the consciousness integrates. So you have consciousness, which is divine, coming into and operating through a human form that actually has evolved out of the animal kingdom. And this is classic esotericism that we're speaking here. And again, many of you to whom I speak are actually, by definition, avatars in the sense that you have come down, many of you, already from highly advanced stages and are appropriating and manifesting through a human form, whether it's as a walk-in, or like myself, a future self overlay integration, or having been born into the physical body and awakened and realized that your native home is not the planet Earth. So many of you have come down specifically with an extraordinary understanding that came in with childhood. You never quite fit in to the reality as was, you know, presented in the schooling systems and with the people with whom you moved and worked. You always felt a little out of sync or not quite seeing things the same way. And this, for us, was very normal And also because we are designed to be way showers, and we are the advance guard or the vector that is advancing an era of light onto planet Earth. We are importing it gradually because you don't just come in, you know, blazing all of your light and blasting everyone to kingdom come, but you come in graciously and gently insert a higher awareness wherever you are. And you do that through your radiation and through your consciousness, which actually transmits very much like a radio. You're constantly sending forth the transmission of your own being. And whether you speak a word or not, your presence transmits the era of light and the higher awareness from the higher worlds from whence we have come into humanity. And that's your service. That's how you do that. So, in the ancient archives, there is a statement here, and I am reading from a book by Benjamin Krem called The Great Approach, which I highly recommend for everyone. And the subtitle is New Light and Life for Humanity. And I'm going to be sharing a few things that he has to say in questions and answers, because he and I were schooled in the same background, the same masters, and the same basic teachings. And he is consciously and in continual contact with one of the masters of the hierarchy, with whom I also work. And although he doesn't say who that is, I can tell who it is just by virtue of how the person speaks. Anyway, you were receiving information which is the same information I've received. But he's written it so beautifully in this book, it will just save me a lot of having to search through my data banks to bring forward the information if I just, you know, share what he's had to say. So within the ancient archives of the Brotherhood, you will find this statement. Search within and find the source of all knowledge and love. Reveal to the world the light of the soul and join the ranks of those who serve. So as you make contact with the soul, inevitably, you will want to serve in some way. You might say service is the bottom line impetus of the soul. So that is an automatic, I would say, response at all times that is very, very evident in a disciple or an initiate of the masters. And every initiate would be a disciple. So the soul seeks to bend the personality into a true reflection of its nature. And that is why the stages of soul absorption and infusion are difficult. Why? Because the personality is always in rebellion. I think you can relate to that. That's the part of you that goes, let somebody else do it. That's theirs to handle. I don't feel like it. I don't want to do it. I want to do something else. That's the little mini-me. But the soul is very selfless. In fact, in the ancient teachings, it's called the soul is called the son of sacrifice, because it sacrifices the oneness with God, the higher consciousness, to come down into the lowest point of light condensation and densification, which would be the third dimension, material plane. So, the point is that it does not want to make the effort. Or when the effort gets really hard, it wants to run away. And over and over again, I think most of us have encountered when we're working with people, they want to talk about their problems. And very seldom do they want to do anything about them. They just want to kvetch and complain about them. They want sympathy, but they don't necessarily appreciate it when you point out that their problems are for them to learn from and master and overcome. And moreover, their problems nearly always result from the fact they're running away, from the very thing they should face. So everyone seems to be fine so long as life, goes along rosy-posy and flows and they get what they want and so forth. And when we're making progress and we can see results, especially seeing results, and when we don't, very, very often the tendency is to go into depression, frustration, self-doubt, all of that. So there comes a time when we just don't see results. And when we are meeting what seems to be a big obstacle or difficulty or a whole series of them, and at that point, the tendency of many people is to run away from it and not to face and overcome, because we don't realize that these obstacles are put there to draw from us the very strength to overcome them. The obstacle itself is an evocation of your solific force. And in the case of a disciple, they like that. It's like, bring it on! Because the last thing we want is a life that doesn't challenge us. I know the Master Moria is fond of saying, blessed be the obstacles by which we achieve. And it's an interesting thing in life. You have to have the balance between the positive and the negative forces. And it's the counterposition of that dynamic that spurs action and builds the pranic force, the spiritual force within us. So without that, you don't have the sufficient tension to catalyze the dynamic energy of the soul. So that's a very, very important point to remember, is that down here in these lower dimensions of polarity and duality, you need the counter pull between the two forces to achieve, to move. So we'll never become a master if we don't have the strength to overcome whatever it is we're faced with, however unpleasant or difficult. However unpleasant the difficulty may be, or however challenging to our sense of ego or self-esteem. So our being, capital B, in this case we're speaking about our higher being, will never demonstrate itself to any great extent until we have put it to work in overcoming such obstacles. So our obstacles might be practical on the physical plane. They might be purely psychological. Nearly always it is psychological in advancing people of a certain degree of spiritual maturation. But even on the physical plane, whenever an obstacle is met, still many people want to run away from it. They think, if I'm over there, it's going to be better for me than here. Then I will not have to face this particular problem. However, the problem lies in this. That problem is going to reappear again and again and again until they face it. And this is especially so with a psychological challenge, because they have not dealt with it and not equip themselves to deal with that problem. Whenever it arises, it keeps lurking in the subconscious until it outs itself invariably at a time when you least want it to do that. That's when that thing rises up in you that, it's like, well, where did that come from? That was the thing you shoved back in your subconscious, didn't want to deal with for the last 10 lifetimes, and now it's on your plate, because you want this to be your last lifetime. So there it is. All of your round toots, all of your undigested meals, all of the things you didn't finish on your plate before are now sitting before you for you to eat. So eat hearty. You know, it's interesting, Neem Karoli Baba, one of the masters of Ram Dass, one of the masters that do this, I remember several that would do this, they would consume massive amounts of food, and what they were really doing was eating the karma of their disciples. And they literally would use food sometimes as the way that they would do that. Not that I'm advising anybody to do that, but just saying, you know, Neem Karoli Baba, for example, ate all, I think all, of Ram Dass's acid when he brought his acid, you know, drop acid when he was in LSD, when he was with his master. And his master said, bring it on, bring it to me. And he took enough to have floored an elephant, and it didn't do anything to him at all. It didn't faze him at all. But it, you know, ultimately it completely, you know, ate the karma that Ram Dass had with drugs. So masters do stuff like that. In fact, they will do anything that it takes to set you free. I really, really will. And to let you know, the masters, all of them, know every thought that you have towards them. Every prayer that you utter for grace, for help, for whatever it is, if it's spiritual, if your heart is asking sincerely, they will respond. No question about it. A way that you can contact the masters, which is a very valid way, is to write a letter and either put it on your altar or stick it in your Bible or your Keys of Enoch or your Course in Miracles, or put it on a picture behind your teacher on your altar, or the master, Jesus, or whoever it is that you look to as your way shower. And you can do that, or you can actually burn the letter, or you can put it under your pillow and sleep on it. Sometimes, not all the time, of course, because not everybody needs this, but sometimes the answer will be apported to you. In other words, it will come on a little slip of paper. Sai Baba does that sometimes with certain devotees. He'll manifest a little slip of paper with the answer or whatever on their altar. Or sometimes a master will actually precipitate, as it's called, a letter or a response. This is how A.P. Sinnott, of the who was a judge with the Theosophical Society, he received all of the letters that are from the Master Morya and the Master Kutumi that are in the book, the Mahatma Letters. I think I told you when I was in London, I went to the British Library and actually read all of those letters that the originals are kept in the British Library in London. So, but you can also get the book. It's available on Amazon, or Quest Books has it, which is the Theosophical Publishing Company. So anyway, people very, very often resist what is, thinking that they can escape it. Some people go to the lengths of committing suicide because they don't want to face whatever it is that's on their plate. What this does is boomerang you immediately back into another incarnation with the added karma of having taken your life, which is a spiritual crime, and then having to incarnate again and pick up where you left off with that additional karma. So you've done nothing but add more burden to yourself, and you still have to face the same problem with maybe poorer circumstances for you to work it through. So bottom line, realize whatever you are faced with, you have requested it. on a higher level because you want to be free. You want to master yourself. You want to make this your final incarnation. And you've created, allowed, promoted, and manifested whatever it is in your life by your past actions. So there's no victims, absolutely none. No victims whatsoever. We always receive in exact measure what we have released into time and space. Sometimes a long time ago, but it eventually is there for us to handle and balance and heal and forgive and release or transcend in some way. So it's like, for example, learning to do the job or the work in wherever it is that you are positioned with your daily making of your daily living. The first few days sometimes are really, really difficult. And you don't always have a sense of what to do or how to handle it. And very often you want to quit, not even try to make it work. But it's interesting with jobs too. Until you have been repositioned by your natural soul's momentum, or the Holy Spirit, as I often call it, generally you're trying to make a shift out of resistance to what is and trying to escape rather than to master the situation. I remember in my years when I was a professional dancer, I would get hired by the most notoriously difficult choreographers. The ones that would scream and yell and call you bad names and make you feel like you're about 2 inches high, or would point out the one flaw in your body or your technique or whatever that would make you cringe. But I learned right on, early on actually, that most of these people were very, very insecure and really needed to be loved and really needed someone who would take their case to heart and give them a kind listening ear. And so I would do that, and it would always turn out that the people would love me and would be really, really nice just because somebody saw through their growls, their curmudgeon demeanor, and it just softened their heart. I did that with several different choreographers, and it was amazing. But everybody, bottom line, wants love, particularly those that are the most difficult to get along with. They're really hurting. They're really down on their case, and that's why they act so nasty. So, again, whoever you're with, it's perfect for what it is you need to confront, work through, and master. And I find a loving approach, the kind approach, invariably will work. And also, pray. Pray for people the very blessings that you would like to have in your own life. Pray for them to have grace and ease and peace of mind and abundance and fulfillment of their desire, the desires of their heart. It's really hard to hate someone when you're praying for them. And the more you pray for them to be blessed, the more you will open to your own blessings. So those are two things you can do. You can write a letter to the master or masters, and you can pray for those who would despitefully use you if they are given a good chance. So don't give them a good chance. Love them and bless them and pray for them. And they will find it very, very hard to attack you when there's only softness and love. They may still try, but there won't be anything for them to play off of, if you get my drift. So the main thing, excuse me, is to make an inner decision that we will solve every problem, overcome every obstacle, do the best that we possibly can, before we try to move on. So instead of running away, we will try to face it and give it our very best shot to overcome. And if we do, we will start strengthening that soul force more and more and more, and weaken the ability of problems to disrupt our peace and our equanimity. We defang the tiger. And we find that when we do that, the things, you know, that used to really, really rattle your cage and get you off balance, it just won't faze you. You'll be amazed that as the soul force grows within you and your light increases, you will just not register problematic situations anymore. You'll interpret them in a whole different way if they come. And in my experience, they very rarely come anymore. It's like you don't need that test. You're already flowing in a higher dimension of expression, so you don't need the same degree of personal strengthening and challenge. So the bigger the obstacle, the bigger the challenge faced, the more we are fitted to become initiate and eventually move into full mastery. It's, you know, it's something that develops so naturally as you really focus every day in your spiritual probing, as you go into meditation and you quiet the mind and you go deeper and deeper into that stillness, which is your true core essence. And you breathe and you bring more and more of the soul by conscious intention down through your mind and down through your emotions and down through the physical body. And you find this tremendous, serene power. It sounds like an oxymoron, but it's actually an experiential state of dynamic peace. You're still, and yet there's a tremendous inner empowerment that develops within you that you can actually feel. And the evidence is, you know, when you move through your life, you just don't get upset anymore. So we're here to restore the plan on Earth, basically, is why we're here. The world stands ready for more light. And the people everywhere are thirsty for new knowledge of themselves and of God. That's another statement out of the mystery schools on the inner planes. And you know, whenever that's the case, people themselves call it forward. They evoke it. As soon as humanity sets up a cry for help, for more light, more information, more technology, more awareness, in a word, of its own nature and purpose, then more is given. And that cry is heard by the spiritual masters, and the word rings out, open the gates, open the floodgates of light. And knowledge, inspiration, and guidance, and all of that begins to flow. And it impacts you on a level, generally, of your soul, which is then filtered down to the high self and eventually comes into your conscious awareness on a human level. And it's those ideas and inspirations that then begin to inspire new momentums in the world. So everything that pours out from the masters is in answer to that cry. And that was actually what happened in 1975 with the publication of The Secret Doctrine and Isis Unveiled by H.P. Blavatsky. And that was what happened before the war, to prepare us and to strengthen us for what was going to be the First and Second World Wars, which was a tremendous initiation, really, for all of humanity. as well as the worst thing that ever happened on our physical planet, aside from the Atlantean battles. But anyway, the spiritual teachings were given at that time, which for the first time were released, the deeper esoteric wisdom teachings of the Senzar writings of the Brotherhood, which were given through H.P. Blavatsky at that time, and later through Alice Bailey, and, well, not later, but concomitantly, really, Helen O'Rourke and then Alice Bailey brought these teachings into the Western world, which is what we call our Western esoteric tradition. And that is the only teaching on the planet, really, that goes into the very practical understanding of the masters and their work and the plan, the actual plan of God as it's working out through the various kingdoms of nature. This is what we would call the esoteric teaching, with the science of soul infusion, because it's an actual science that has to do with how we transfigure the carnal man into an immortal light being. It's a very specific training that used to be given only in the interplane mystery schools, and now it's being taught openly, like, for example, on this radio show. That's what we're talking about. So we're restoring the plan on Earth that had been disrupted and interrupted by a great war between the forces of light and darkness in late Atlantean times. And that was what precipitated onto the physical plane from the astral plane as the First and Second World Wars, which will not be allowed to happen again. So don't worry about that. But just saying, it was a tremendous thing that happened. And, of course, resulted in the flood, as I've spoken about in previous shows. So the several questions have been asked, and one of them has to do with the planet's environment and the Space Brotherhood. And you need to understand that all the hierarchies of all the planets in this system are in touch with each other and in touch with the planetary hierarchy of this planet. They all work together. There's no such thing as a group of ascended masters that are clueless about what's happening with other ascended masters on other planets. It just doesn't work that way. The whole of this universe is working out a great plan. The galaxy is part of that. The entire great central sun system and sun systems with a plural dimension are all unfolding levels of the same divine plan to bring the celestial divine plan to bear into the material universes and transform them into the divine kingdoms. So that's a collective work that's been done. And our planet is under constant surveillance by very, very highly evolved masters. Most of the Space Brotherhood that operate in vehicles called UFOs come mainly from Mars and Venus. Also, there are a few from Jupiter and Mercury and a few other planets. And they have put a ring of light around this planet, which keeps it stable on its axis, so that even though it could have flipped at any moment, it's kind of skewered like a martini olive with toothpicks to keep it in the right radius so that the evolutionary plan can unfold without disruption on this planet. It's a collective supervision of the advancing light waves of souls that are moving through the Earth School so that they can continue to unfold without disruption. So even though the planet is somewhat slightly off its axis, this ring allows it within karmic limits to be held so that the poles do not flip, which has actually been predicted by many so-called prophets of doom to take place, as well as others who are not prophets of doom, but actually indigenous elders. So we'll see how that plays out, because I know I have done radio shows where I've quoted the Mayans, and so we'll see. God, you know, after all, is in charge, and it will be according to his will. But I personally do not foresee any kind of devastation. I see actually the golden age, the era of light, advancing more so today than ever before, and with an absolute assurance that we cannot go back. We can't go back, no way, no how, because there's too much light on the planet now. There's just too much light. And those of you who have been horrified and upset by some of the things that are happening right now in the Middle East and with the terrorists and so forth, what I've been told is that evil will short-circuit itself. It has never won. It never will win. And not only will it not win, it's going to implode and turn in and destroy itself from within, because there's not enough momentum for it to keep going. People are waking up too much. There's too much light on the planet. There's too much awareness dawning. So even though certain ones have been, let's say, taken over by evil forces from the psychic planes, they're going to be reaping instant karma, which will bring to an end some of them. And in other cases, they're going to have a dynamic spiritual awakening, which will be so sudden and so abrupt that it will stop them in mid-evil doing, and they will change. So we're going to see that more and more and more. So don't believe that they're going to win. I was also told that many of these precious children that have been taken out in such horrid ways actually, in many cases, volunteered to come in to act as a group alarm, really, to the observing international community, that we really need to stand up in our masses and bring to a halt such behavior. It you know, all forms of genocide and all of these terrorist activities, they're the work of negative forces that are using people that are fanaticized and believe things that have distorted their minds. So we as a global community really need to take responsibility for that. So we will be moving into a time when war will be entirely abolished and it will be declared illegal and will not be allowed to erupt anywhere. And the masters are on the planet to do all that they can within karmic law to see that that takes place. We'll be moving more and more into forums, not formal necessarily, but global forums of dialogue and mediation for the resolution of conflicts. That's actually what the United Nations was supposed to be for. And it still has that potential to be used in that capacity. Many wonderful people in the United Nations that I met. So we all basically want the same thing when we're working with a light. We all do. And it's just a matter of collaborating and working to make it happen. The masters are guiding us to work towards a system where we will have free education and free medical care for everyone, and food and shelter in equal distribution, where everyone on the planet will have the wherewithal to live decently, having food, shelter, clean water, and the necessary resources for a quality life. The eradication of starvation is number one to address. There's absolutely no reason for it. And homelessness. Those two things need to be totally eradicated. And the masters are working through inspiring members of humanity to lead the charge in terms of dealing with that. The plan is to have the right relationship between nations and peoples and groups and cultures. The restoration of right human relationships is primarily what is needed to bring about global goodwill and to fuel sharing, which is going to be necessary for us to meet the needs of all of these various areas and people. So there will be a gradual and increasingly rapid shift from commercialism to sharing and barter, and from competition and commercialism to cooperation and collaboration. And these are all things that are being fueled by the planetary brotherhood and sisterhood of souls that are working. And, you know, as I've said before, we're all part of that. We're all part of the forces of light. And we're all working towards this, each in our own way, whatever we're doing. Some of us, like, for example, you might want to, if you tithe, which you really should consider doing if you want to always have abundance, give a portion of your income, 10% is the recommended for a tithe, to a really good organization, like, for example, World Vision, Operation Blessing, some organization that you know is really out there in the trenches, feeding people and helping people and ministering to their needs. And you'll be guided to the right one. But that's one way you can help. And more than anything else, live a life that is demonstrating right human relations and equity and justice and kindness and all of that. So the masters have been moving out from their places where they've been living now for almost 100,000 years. It's the fall of Atlantis. They have been living hidden from humanity. But now they are appearing into the world and have been since about 1975. Eventually, there will be 40 of the masters of the Great White Brotherhood who will be living openly on the physical plane as they did, you know, many, many thousands of years ago. They lived openly. And the inner plane ashrams will be built and visible on the physical plane. Already we're seeing them out there. And there's going to be more. There is a master in all of the big cities, major cities on the planet. Right now, let's see. There is a master in Tokyo that came into Tokyo in 1975. They say he's one of the youngest masters. He's 200 years old, because masters, some of them have immortalized their bodies, so they're hundreds of years old, but he's considered relatively young at 200. There's a master in Moscow that came in to Moscow in 1923 and started moving more openly out into the community in 1978. There's one in Darjeeling. There's a master in London whom I've had direct contact with, and that's the master, the Lord Maitreya, also called the Christ, who is the head of head of the masters, and the planetary world teacher. And there are three masters in mainland Europe. There's a master in Geneva, New York City, in the mountains above Los Angeles. Oh, and you'll like this. There's the Master Jesus, who is living on the outskirts of Rome since 1980. And he is said to be around 600 years old. So eventually there will be 40 that will be living openly in the outer world. And I think right now there's over 14 that are living in the outer world. They very rarely ever announce themselves as masters. I mean, I don't think they do at all. What you notice is somebody, perhaps on television or in a meeting or something, that has an uncommon grasp of practical ways to get things done in very harmonious ways. So they would be known by their influence, again, their grounded practicality, their humanitarian sense of fair play. They're very, very just. They're always in a consciousness of win-win. So they're not adversarial. They're not people that are going to stir the pot of contentiousness, but rather to find that common denominator where we can actually come into one accord. So that's important to realize. Somebody recently asked me about crop circles, and yes, they are made by the Space Brotherhood. Many of them are from the Ashtar Command. Commander Soltek is often responsible for his fleet. In other words, is often responsible for making those crop circles. And they have to do with the joining of mental intention to mentally project a particular configuration. So it's like a projected thought form, which is then densified through their technology of light and sound, sonar transmission, and it's injected energetically then through the craft into that place on the planet. And they speak multidimensionally to an area of the consciousness that understands immediately, because it's a spiritual transmission that's given in the crop circles. The Nazca Plains were also created by extraterrestrials, and but not the Moai, I think they call them, the Easter Island statues were not made by extraterrestrials, according to the information that I've received. The occupants in Roswell that crashed were coming from Mars. And the crash was not an accident, but a deliberate act of sacrifice on the part of these individuals in the spaceship. Because normally those spaceships cannot crash. They're made of etheric matter. So they have no weight. They cannot be destroyed. And the occupants deliberately brought down the vibrational rate of their ship, the matter of the ship, into the dense physical and crashed the spaceship, so that we would have evidence of the spaceship and five spacemen who could be studied and seen to be certainly similar to humans on this planet, if not identical. And Benjamin Krim says that the American authorities have known this for years, but of course the evidence, the vehicle and its occupants, because they were really etheric, disintegrated quickly back into the etheric. However, the autopsies were carried out on the bodies beforehand, and there is a film of this, which personally I have seen, so that there is major evidence that this whole UFO question is real. Sai Baba, probably more than anyone else on the planet, knows the reality of that. In fact, when I was with him, he was constantly cracking jokes about UFOs. I had dinner or lunch with him one time and with a group, and he was taking chapatis and skimming them across to me saying, UFOs, UFOs. So these things are real. These things are part of the plan, the divine plan. And it's fun. It's just delightful. I have a lot of questions that people have asked me, and I've run out of time, so I'll have to continue this at another time. But just to let you know, there is a plan, and there is an advancing era of light that is visibly, tangibly in evidence on the planet now. And the ancient ones are appearing. Maybe one of you are listening. Maybe we are all the ancient ones. I personally think we are. Because we're interested in this sort of thing. And we know that we have a role that we're fulfilling. And your children, those wise little children that are coming out with these amazing statements, they're the ancient ones, many of them reappearing. So take heart and really savor this opportunity that we have to be part of the planetary and celestial masters of light and the advancing of the era of light onto planet Earth. So let's take a deep breath and go out chanting Anai Hu. Deep breath. Remember that the masters are only a thought away, and they do receive and hear your thoughts and your intentions to be of service and to participate more fully in this advancing era of light. God bless you, and God willing, I will be with you this time next week. Adonai.